The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Show. You know, comparing Eric Metaxas to any other radio show host is a lot like comparing apples and, oh, I don't know, oranges perhaps?
Yes, that's it. Precisely, oranges.
Ripe, luscious, supple oranges dripping with sticky sweet juice.
Another day or two and they'll be rotten and inedible.
But today, oh, they're glorious and inviting.
Just like Eric.
And now, aren't you glad he's here?
Eric Metaxas. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show, Hour 2. Of today's show, but we are continuing the conversation with Tyler O'Neill. The new book is called Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tyler, I was saying to you that they seem to be attacking people with whom they disagree, people with whom we agree, as hate groups. And I said that the Southern Poverty Law Center is itself a hate group. And you kind of pushed back against that term. And I think I agree with you, actually. But go ahead on your reasoning for that.
Yeah. So thanks for the question. There are a lot of organizations that have sued the Southern Poverty Law Center for defamation. And the Southern Poverty Law Center always comes out and says, hate group doesn't actually mean anything. It's protected speech. It's an opinion. And you can't claim that this is defamation because by hate group, we're not saying anything concrete. And my point is they are saying something concrete.
Yeah.
They're accusing you of being in league with the KKK, of being one of these organizations that foments terrorism and hate. And that means something. So I don't call the Southern Poverty Law Center a hate group because I don't want to give them that argument. They don't reach that threshold, and being called a hate group means something.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
need to hold them accountable for that.
Well, it's interesting that that you often hear people saying that certain kinds of language leads to violence. And of course, there's some truth there. But it gets really ugly when people say, you know, when Donald Trump said this, it led to Charlottesville, or it led to this, or led to that. And you think, wait a minute, that gets a little dangerous, you know. But it does seem, without any doubt, to be true that what the Southern Poverty Law Center said led to the potential murder of all kinds of people in 2012 at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. I mean, it was specifically incited by their map of what they call these hate groups and stuff. And one of them was the FRC. And they gave the address. And the guy who went there, as you said earlier, was able to go there because the Southern Poverty Law Center had published the address and had labeled them as a target on their map. And amazingly, the media didn't really talk very much about this, because if ever there were a direct link to somebody doing something, this is about as direct as it can get.
And of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center condemned the attack. The man wasn't working as an agent of theirs. But the clear connection, as you point out, it's undeniable. And they continued to list FRC on the hate map, keeping it there regardless of the attack. And then later, and you talk about them accusing Trump of things, the Southern Poverty Law Center accused Trump of fomenting the Pittsburgh shooting against the synagogue in Pittsburgh, which is particularly absurd, not only because Trump is such a great pro-Jewish, pro-Israel president, but because the synagogue shooter himself expressed hatred against Trump. And yet you have the Southern Poverty Law Center, this arbiter of hate, coming out and saying, look, this guy who hated Trump attacked this synagogue because of Trump.
I have to say that, you know, we're dealing with really it seems to me, high levels of evil. There's nothing less to say. It is evil because it is so the level of cynicism in attributing to your enemy what you yourself are doing. I mean, here you have a guy in Pittsburgh, says he hates Trump, kills Jews. Trump loves Jews, loves Israel. His daughter converted to Judaism. His son-in-law, his grandkids are Jewish. And they twist it around in this way that it's absolutely diabolical. And it's just so deeply cynical. Again, if it weren't for you and, you know, now me on this program calling them out on it, the media doesn't seem to make much of it when it cuts in that direction. I want to just go back to the this attack in 2012 of the Family Research Council. You said that tell us what happened, because a lot of people don't remember it, or maybe they didn't pay attention at the time at all. What is it that happened? In other words, you have the Southern Poverty Law Center listing the Family Research Council, you know, whom I revere, the folks at Family Research Council. These people are heroes. But you have the Southern Poverty Law Center. They have every right to say, we don't like the Family Research Council. That's fine. It's America. But they then label them a hate group. And somebody goes there with the intention of murdering the people in the building. How did this how was this murder stopped? You mentioned a guard.
Yeah. So when he broke in, he pulled a gun out of his bag, and the security guard, Leo Johnson, saw it, knew what was going on. He rushed and tackled him, and the guy got off three shots. One of them went into the desk, one of them went into the ceiling, and the other one went into Leo Johnson's arm. And then Leo Johnson had him on the ground, and thank God the police were nearby, because they were called immediately. They were right on the scene as Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin was coming down the elevator.
You're kidding.
He saw
this
tussle, and then the police came in. That's how fast it was. And it's remarkable that it was foiled. But Leo Johnson is still recovering to this day from these injuries that he received.
Well, yeah, if you get shot, folks, anything can happen. That's just an amazing thing to me that this happened and very few people know about it. The person who did this, I assume he's behind bars and will be there for a while.
25 years. He got a sentence of 25 years in 2013. So that means he should theoretically be out by 2038.
But I mean, the idea that he went in there with the intent to murder people, that seems fairly clear. And he, you know, what could have happened, it's so horrific. Did he say more about what his plans were? How many people he meant to kill, how much ammunition he had?
That is available, but what I know that he said was that he went in intending to kill absolutely everyone in the building, however many that were. I think he was prepared. I think he had about like 50 rounds, and you know, he just intended to kill everyone.
But he literally had a bag of Chick-fil-A sandwiches.
Yeah, and that's what made it particularly harrowing to me when I heard that the Chick-fil-A Foundation had given money to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
What?
Yeah. Last year this came out. One of their...
You know what? I remember this now. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. One of their... And look, I don't want to cast too many aspersions on Chick-fil-A. I think what they've said was there was one board member, and board members are allowed to send certain amounts of money that they want at their own discretion to organizations. They should have prevented it from ever happening, but this one board member wanted to fund the SPLC, and it was allowed to go through.
Well, again, there are organizations. We remember, some of us remember Acorn. I mean, there are organizations out there that are getting away, if not literally with murder, then at least metaphorically with murder. We need to be able to call them out and say they shouldn't be funded. If you have the ability to spend money and to give to them, make sure you don't give to them. And, you know, I just want to say, if it weren't for you and this book, many fewer people would know about the Southern Poverty Law Center and think of it as, oh, maybe they're an okay organization that makes some mistakes. But the reality is that, as you detail in the book, they're corrupt. They're doing tremendous harm. The world needs to know about it. And I would say CEOs, you mentioned this earlier, specifically CEOs of companies need to be aware of what is happening. Before you give a dime, before anyone gives a dime to the Southern Poverty Law Center, read Making Hate Pay by Tyler O'Neill. Tyler, thank you for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
No more of your darkness. All my pictures seem to fade to black and white.
And John, that's because it's the music of the guests I have in the studio. Skillet, welcome to the program.
Thank you. What's
up? You guys are just half of Skillet. You're John and Corey Cooper, but there are four of you in the band, but in the studio we can only accommodate two. But you guys are the founders, correct?
Yeah, we are.
And you're married?
Yes.
How many years married?
22.
22?
Yes.
You got kids?
Yes.
How many?
Two kids?
16 and 13.
All right.
Girl and a boy.
That's the most important stuff to, you know, to get out of the way. And you live?
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's a hard rocking state.
That's where we're laughing. It's not very likely, but yes, Wisconsin is where we live.
Well, I really do. I want to get your story because there are tons of people watching right now. They know you. They know all about you. But there are tons of people who don't know anything about you. And I guess let's... I want to get into the idea of what does it mean, you know, to be a rock band that's either secular or Christian or faith-based. Whatever. I want to get into that. But first, I want to get your story. So how did you – well, where did you meet?
All right. Let's see. We met actually through – I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. And so we had basically friends, mutual friends that we ended up meeting. They said, I think that you'd really like this other girl that we knew basically that plays in a band and sings. And I played in my own band.
Wait, you were in Memphis. And
yeah.
Where were you, Corey?
I was in Wisconsin.
You were in Wisconsin. So – and you matchmaking was like across the country or
it was mutual friends. I was friends with his pastor and pastor's wife, and so they were like, come on down and visit us.
And they heard that he was looking for a girl with purple hair.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly.
Isn't everybody
it grows
now,
I
assume, because my wife told me to do that, I should always assume that that's your natural color. I would never want to accuse you of dyeing your hair. So I assume that's an amazing
thing.
It's
all natural.
Does it run in your family?
It does. Everybody's purple.
Amazing. Yep.
Her lips really are that color, too, naturally.
it's amazing.
She's like
amazing.
A My Little Pony.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember those toys.
Little kids do like it.
Okay, so you guys met sometime in the 90s, I guess?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Skillet originally started... Corey was not actually in the group at first. It was me and two other guys.
Yeah.
And Skillet was a side project of different bands. It was actually just for fun. And my pastor at my church said, hey, John, I think that you would enjoy writing music with this other guitar player from this other band and find a drummer. And it'd be like cooking, throwing everything into a skillet from all these different bands and write some songs.
Did the pastor say it would be like a skillet?
Yeah. And it was kind of a joke.
Aren't you glad he didn't say like a paella?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Because how would you like for the last 20-something years?
I usually say crock pot.
Paella.
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, when we get done with this, I'm going to look up the definition of paella.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd like it as a band name.
Yeah, you don't care.
I feel pretty
sure. Wisconsin don't need to know about that. All right. So seriously, so you were a musician, and this kind of just happened.
Yeah. I had been in several bands. Corey had been in several bands, and I ended up starting this side project really to do outreach for my church at like college campuses and stuff like that.
So you were a Christian as a young person. It's not something that happened recently.
No. I was a Christian. My parents are Christians. I was raised in the church.
Yeah.
Gave my life to Christ when I was five. And
so obviously you got the tattoos before that.
Yeah, yes, yeah. It was very early. They had to sign a waiver.
When you were five, that is so cute.
Oh, man, yeah. My mom was a radical follower of Christ.
Yeah.
Taught me about the Bible ever since I was a kid. Corey also, Corey's is a PK. So she, her dad was a, got saved in the 70s.
Yep, charismatic movement in the 70s. He got saved, and they, my parents just lived it. And so I grew up kind of watching them, like,
so PK,
this is real.
People who know what PK means, that's like one of those shibboleths, right? Like, if you know what that means, that tells you that you're part of a certain group. But you're a pastor's kid or a preacher's kid. So, and that was in the South,
in
Tennessee. I'm sorry, you're from
South,
he's from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So your parents came to faith in, like, that 70s, whatever.
Yep.
Or maybe earlier. I don't know when they came to faith.
Yeah, 70s.
No, in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
yep.
Yeah.
And got radically saved,
yes.
Her parents, radically saved. And
life changed. I mean, they were always helping people. We always had people living with us, five kids in my family. So whatever they could do, they were doing. And I'm like, you know, this is real. So I became a Christian when I was five, too. I'm like,
wow, really?
Yeah.
So
and never
both
had the crazy PK rebellion either. I just thought,
you know,
I just want to live for Jesus. It's, so
but
somebody show me how.
As a parent, right, like I want to say that whenever people say that, well, all kids, you know, go through this thing, and I think, no, they don't. There are many that don't, and that they just know it's real. And, you know, we all have our ups and downs as people.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But the fact is, you know, it's kind of like saying, like, I went through my flat earth period. You don't need to go through a flat earth period. Like, you can have a lot of crazy thoughts, but you can know, like, the basic truth about the spherical nature of the earth.
Right.
You know, you don't have to go through that in college. I was experimenting with flat earth. So
I'm going to borrow that, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you
can steal
mind.
It. Go
I
and
like
steal
that.
It. I don't mind. But it's just kind of funny that the two of you were serious about your faith as kids.
It's funny because there are some similarities between our stories when we met that were interesting like that, and that our parents led us to the Lord, and we each had a real passion for music, had a passion for evangelism. I love evangelism. I wanted to tell about this great relationship with God that I had, that God knows my name. Couldn't believe that He would care about me, but I wanted to do that through music, because music brings people together, and it music, I think, is one of the best things we have in this whole earth. And
I think it actually proves that we're different than, you know, the other animals, because sometimes you listen
exactly,
to some music and you think, how does that not touch your soul? It is just there's no way to describe it. And if you really get down to it, you can be really trippy thinking about what is it.
Right.
Like, what is going on? Like, what is music is just.
I agree.
And did you know from a little kid that you wanted to do music? And the same with you, Corey?
Well, for me, my mom was a piano teacher. I have a funny story that you might find interesting, which is that I'm in the Bible Belt. And so when I first heard rock music, my mom was a piano teacher and a voice teacher. Five or 6 years old, I first heard Michael Jackson, Beat It, at my friend's house, and I came home and sang it to my mom and got like a holy butt whooping for singing the devil's music. And so rock and roll was outlawed, drums, guitars, couldn't wear black, you know, and I'm paying them back pretty good now.
Yeah.
I got all that going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was very much raised in that, went to several Bill Gothard seminars growing up. If you remember that time of
I was talking to Bill Gaither on the phone like a month ago, and we're going to get him on this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Bill Gaither, Bill Gothard.
No, I don't know Bill Gothard.
Oh, okay, there was Bill Gothard was a famous preacher at the time, but his big platform ended up becoming how Christian rock was wolves in sheep's clothing, and that was his big thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he actually had a lot of great stuff, Institutes for Bible Living that I liked, but I was just like, man, these people are crazy about Christian rock being evil, and I always had a passion for Christian music.
I wouldn't call it evil. Some of it's just bad. But it's not evil. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference between evil and bad. So
that's very good.
So
too.
you can borrow all this stuff. So you were raised in a musical family.
Yeah, that's right.
And what about you?
Not really so much. My kindergarten teacher told my parents that my sister and I should get some kind of music lessons. So they asked me what I wanted to play, and I said, well, piano and guitar. And they said, we'll start you on piano, then, I guess.
At age five?
Yeah, is that kindergarten
piano
age?
Piano and guitar?
Yeah, I guess I like
that's pretty sophisticated. Most five-year-olds would say recorder.
Yeah, PlayStation. Yeah.
That's the cool. That's the recorder is like the cool instrument at age five. Okay, so and Corey, you at what point did you begin to take music more seriously?
I was probably around 12, 13, when I thought I want to know what God has for my life. It was a whole theme of like everybody has a destiny in the church. I'm like, what's my destiny? I want to know what I want to do, and I don't really care what it is, as long as God uses me, I'm cool with it. So, and then I felt like God speak to me about doing something in music, which I didn't know what that meant. I mean, on a big scale, on a small scale, I don't care if I'm worship leader at my church, I'm happy for it. If I'm just right. doing outreach band, I'm happy for it. However he wants to use me, that's cool. And if it's a big scale, that's cool too. Whatever he wants. And yeah. so then I just started focusing on writing and playing and all the stuff, because I really love music. To me, it's like the best language for me to communicate how I feel.
And what genre of music were you involved in before, you know, you met John?
Yeah, more mellower, kind of probably more like alt-y, alt pop.
But isn't basically any music mellower than the
music Skillet?
You get? Yeah. Right? Like, how could you be less mellow? Anyway, that's were you drawn to the kind of music that you make now from the beginning?
Oh yeah, definitely. When I first heard what I would call metal, heavy metal, Metallica and Iron Maiden and all those bands. Yeah. Oh yeah, I loved it. It was like instantly felt my life had changed. You know, I was in about 6th grade and my friend we were just getting into like the idea of working out. It was the 80s, so everybody wanted to be like Rambo he's like, man, I got this weight bench. And we had like, you know, these little 5 pound
and he's like, gotta crank the metal.
Yeah, you have to crank the metal. He's like, you gotta hear this. And he turned on Metallica and I was sold. I was
and a star was born. We gotta go to a break. We'll be right back, folks. I'm talking to half of Skillet. Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot, because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com.
But I can't control it, so stay away from me. The beast is ugly, I feel the rage and I just can't hold it. It's scratching on the wall.
Monster, I do not. But it is Monster. And I gotta say, Monster remains one of the most streamed rock songs of all time. The band behind it, Skillet, is with me in the studio. They are one of the best-selling rock bands of the 21st century. That's this century. Multi-platinum. They've sold over 12 million albums worldwide. Last year, 2018, they clocked 1 billion Spotify streams, 2 Grammy nominations, Billboard Music Award for the double platinum album, Awake, yada, yada, yada. Here they are. I mean, that is a lot of success. That is absolutely amazing. Mm. And you have a new album called Victorious coming out in August.
Yeah.
Very soon.
That's
exciting. Is that why you're here? You're like promoting? Are you in pro- promotion mode right
now? We're always in promotion mode, yeah. But yes, we are promoting the new record. Yeah, right now. That's okay. Why we're here.
Now, these are really are some big numbers, and I think that the people who are managing money are skimming off the top. I really just want to tell you right now. Just want to tell you right now because you
be
should,
sure of that.
You should have enough money by now to be able to have all those tattoos removed. I'm serious because I know you don't want to. You don't want to grow old with those tattoos, do you?
Oh, well,
do you? Because
well,
that's permanent. Do you understand? Yeah. They're permanent. They probably didn't tell you that, right?
No, I was unaware that they were permanent.
Yes. You could change the color of your hair just like that, but the tattoos are permanent. Well, you know what? That's why I wear the long sleeve stuff. I got a lot of nasty tats.
You got a lot of. Oh yeah. I bet you got some skillet tattoos.
Yeah,
under
no,
there.
They're kind of nasty, like flaming skulls and like you know snakes and stuff. And I just don't like. That's not part of my image anymore.
No.
So that's why I wear the long sleeves.
Yeah. All right.
But at the beach, I'm a wild man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right. We got to talk about this. So your story. So it's kind of cool. So you meet. You're doing different kind of music. Than you are mm-hmm. at that time. At what point, I mean, was your initial interest in each other romantic, or was it music, or was it both immediately? How did that happen?
Romantic, yes. That was the first. We were never planning on playing music together. In fact, when we first got married, she still had her music going. I was doing mine. And we went through a transition in the band where we wanted to add some keyboards in. We were going to be changing some things around. And I was like, well, Corey could do it. It means you have to quit her band. Yeah, I don't think we ever saw this happening.
We really did. I mean, initially when we knew Skillet got signed by a label, so we were like, okay. But we talked about how we didn't want to be separated. So a lot of families do that where the wife's at home and the guy's on the road. We're like, we just don't really want to do that. So I jumped in the van and was their merch girl.
Yeah.
So we were together.
Whoa. Yeah. You were their merch girl?
I was their merch girl.
Do you think that, you know, like, civilians like me know what merch girl means? I think you mean you sold the merchandise
yes.
for the band.
It means you live in a van with like four other dudes and you don't sleep and you yeah. just show up and
it's
unload.
I promise
it's all hands on deck.
Yeah. That's, but you know what? That's the kind of wife yeah. every guy is looking for. Like if you're willing to do that, they're like, she's all in. That's
yeah,
great. You know,
totally.
You're totally all in.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So yeah. then when they added keys, it was like, she's already out here and she's free.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we didn't have any money. I mean, yeah. Nobody was getting
I got
paid
$2
much.
A day for per diem. That was it.
She doesn't eat much. That's all she needed. She needed like a stick of gum. And,
right. Yeah.
You know,
if you're really
an almond.
If you're struggling financially, you don't want to marry a big woman. You want to marry a small woman.
Yeah.
She eats very little. You know, keep it lean and mean, and then later on you can gorge.
That's but, exactly
okay,
right.
So you guys.
That's exactly right.
So you suddenly okay. Now when did you married in 97?
97. Yeah. So we got married about 3 months after Skillet's first record came out.
Uh-huh.
We got married and went on the road, and about 6 months after that is when Corey kind of joined the band.
Right.
And then me and Corey ended up writing the music. So that yeah. was in 1997.
Yeah.
Married in 97. She came on the road in 97.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty healthy. I think that might keep the marriage together.
I think so.
We still like each other.
It's
so.
Been 22 yeah. years. I think you're doing okay.
I think we're all right,
the
baby.
The first 22 years are definitely the hardest.
Right.
My wife and I are 23 right now.
Right.
And I think, like, up till now, it's been kind of tough. But, like, suddenly, you know, once you crack that 22 number, that magic number. So you guys are good.
We're good.
You're
good. All good.
Good. I feel
but,
good now.
But when, it's kind of funny, though, because when you think of, like, rock stars or musicians on the road and stuff, it seems like such an unhealthy environment for relationships. So it's the fact that you're both in the band, obviously, there's something very healthy about that, whatever. You're,
yeah.
You're together.
There is, you know, and we have two kids that have toured with us ever since they were born as
How old are the kids?
They're 16 and 13. And
you could
they
have like a Partridge Family thing going,
oh,
like,
yeah.
just like that.
Yeah, it's just that we're better looking, but it's exactly like that.
I want to be your Reuben Kincaid. I want to wear like a beige turtleneck and just stand in the wings and just go like this.
Yeah, yes. baby.
Yeah. No, that is so cool. But so your kids are they're old enough to be into music, obviously themselves,
yeah.
and
yeah.
so are they, or what are they?
They are now. They don't realize how awesome we are.
Yeah.
And but
the kids never do.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
But, they've had it really cool. They've toured with everybody. You know, they played with Alice Cooper and
another
Metallica.
People don't know that Alice Cooper is a serious Christian.
He is.
Unbelievable.
I don't know him well.
I still have to get him on this program because I just find that fascinating.
Yeah.
Amazing.
When I met him, I did ask him, I said, everybody always says that you're a Christian. Yeah. Is that actually accurate? And he's like,
he punched you.
Yeah. He ate me, you know, like a bat.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Ozzy.
That was Ozzy.
Yeah, it was Ozzy, not Alice Cooper.
No. Alice Cooper is a lot cooler than Black Sabbath. I think Black Sabbath was kind of a little nastier than Alice.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking, what are we talking about? So
awesome stuff.
Awesome stuff.
Kids on the road.
We're out of time. We're going to be right back. Stick around. John and Corey Cooper, who are half of the band called Skillet. Got to ask you, just because I know everybody's thinking it, have you ever been compared to ABBA?
No.
Okay.
But I like ABBA.
But awesome.
So maybe that's just me.
Yeah.
But you're Swedish, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like meatballs, Swedish meatballs.
I got to ask you, you have opened for a lot of bands that are where there's no faith, involved, and you've been criticized for that. And people often, you know, like people who are very serious about their faith, oftentimes get very confused, just like your mom did, thinking that Michael Jackson's music is the devil's music. People don't have a good theology about art sometimes, and Christians can be really bad about that. And I know you've been involved in a lot of that kind of controversy. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I see it sort of like I see anything else in the Christian life, which is that if you're a plumber, you don't only plumber for Christian folks,
right?
Or whatever.
You don't? Be ye separated, my brother. No. You don't install pipes, okay, for the devil's people. Come on,
yes,
man. And the pipes themselves should be saved. It's just, come on.
Yes.
Are your guitars Christian?
Yes.
Okay. And the amps have some kind of faith?
Yes.
Right, because then it's Christian music. It's that simple. Okay. But so what bands have you opened up for that you've gotten a lot of criticism for?
Well, I mean, sometimes we get criticism just for the fact that all of our songs are not overtly religious.
Right.
Sometimes we sing love songs, or we sing a song that, well, that song was called Hero. Could it be about Jesus, or could it be about a girl?
Right,
they're very like that. And I think the art is really cool to be subjective.
Yeah.
And I like film, for instance. I like films that don't preach to me, but they can have a great message to it, and I can take it the way I want to.
Right.
And film can change my mind about politics, can change my mind about stuff, and that's what we try to do.
Well, like Mary Poppins or Sound of Music never mentions Jesus, but I watch them. They're not Christian films.
No.
They're clearly of the devil. They don't mention Jesus. Actually, you guys must know, like, this controversy, that only Christian musicians have experienced has been going on forever, right? And I'm trying to think. It wasn't Keith Green. It was Phil Kagi. Came out with with an album called The Master and the Musician. Do you know about this?
I know Phil Kagi, but I don't know where you're going.
Check this out. This is crazy, right? So he's doing all this great Christian music, and then he blows people's minds by coming out with an instrumental album.
Yes.
And people are like, how could it be a Christian album? Because there's no Christian lyrics.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Like it's funny to me.
Yeah.
Like it's absolutely funny that people have such a poor sense of, when you label something Christian, is that a Christian apple? Is that a Christian mug?
Yes.
Is that a Christian, and all beauty is of God and whatever. But has that been hard on you? Have things gotten better over the years? Because some people
are
just
much
very
better.
Pharisaical and they don't get it.
But much, much better than they used to be. And I think that for us, what it means to be a Christian band isn't that every song is even necessarily about Jesus. Now, every song is religious, might not have lyrics, as you said. To us, what makes it Christian is who we are. It's the way we act on stage and the way we act off stage. It's what we talk about in the song. It's being a light to the world. And we're very passionate about that. And most of the criticism has kind of gone away. It's like some people are never going to be convinced, and I don't try to convince them.
No.
You know, they wouldn't like the way I look because they don't like, you know, cool dudes. You know what I'm saying?
Jesus didn't have a nose ring. What's up with that?
I don't know.
You know
me taxes.
Saying? Yeah, exactly. No, but it is kind of funny, though, because like you realize that Christians of the religious variety can be cruel. And frankly, I don't know what they're talking about, because if they're right, they're right. But in this case, they're not right.
Sure.
And all beauty and all goodness is of God. And sometimes we kind of try to insist that it have this Christian packaging.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it kind of hit me a few years ago, both of us, 10 years ago, that Christian music was mainly being listened to by Christian people. And I think a lot of the goal of Christian music was always to win the world to Christ. And so I thought, you know, maybe we need to have some songs that aren't just about Jesus. Otherwise, people don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So that's what we try to do with our music if we can.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's called evangelism.
It is called evangelism.
I think Jesus is pro-evangelism. Don't you think?
Is.
I kind of get that idea from the New Testament.
Sure, sure.
Maybe I'm wrong
and
about
a lot
that.
Of bands that we tour with on the rock side of things, there's always quite a few of the musicians that grew up in youth groups. And they've gotten as far away from the church as they can, and then we show up. And a lot of times we've actually played at their youth group because we've been around for so long, and they're like, oh, my word, Skillet is here. And within a couple weeks, it's like, I walked away from God, whether it be their experience of somebody judging them or hypocrisy that they've seen or whatever it is, choices that they've made, and they feel like God hates them. People hate them. Mm-hmm. People are mean. Christians are mean. And then they see us and we're just normal. We have a good marriage. Our kids are really nice. And that sometimes is just the salt and the light that they need. Be like, okay, maybe my experience was a little bit skewed. Maybe those people were mean, but that's not the way Jesus is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's so wonderful. That's a little bit of what Brian Headwell shared with me, that on the, you know, on the circuit out there, you meet people and you get to share with people that would not be interested. You know, if you know, you didn't look the way you do, they would just kind of turn you off right away. So that's pretty cool.
Very similar. We toured with Brian a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, he is so wonderful. I just love him. Just a good guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people gave him tremendous criticism when he went back to Korn, as you know.
Yeah.
Like, how can you be there and how can you be doing what you're doing and stuff? So when you write a song that is not overtly Christian, you know, it just strikes me that you're making art, right? And art can be beautiful, and it points to God, even if it doesn't do so overtly.
Yeah.
But you really are, you're rare, I guess, in that you do both. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do think it's kind of hard to do both because people like things in boxes. You know, we like to understand what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so I think that Skillet is a band that's been able to do both because I think our biggest selling point is we're very authentic. We don't try to cater to this or try to cater to this. We go, hey, this is who we are, and it's kind of like no apologies about it. And when we sort of crossed over to rock music, a lot of people said, hey, you should maybe not say you're from the Christian market. If somebody says, are you a Christian band? Say no. And we've always said, yeah, that's where we're from. It's who we are.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that we're real smells good to folks.
Exactly. We're going to be right back. Final segment with John and Corey Cooper, who are half of Skillet.
Help me tonight. I'm closer to the edge. Tonight. Standing on the ledge. So why won't you reach out your hand and save me? Tonight. I'm damaged if you dare. Tonight. Feels like no one cares.
Drifting beneath the horizon. Body's weak, but I'm trying to make it to shore. But I'm falling short. I need you more.
Hey there, folks. That sounds like the voice of John Cooper, is it? Pretty cool, man.
The soothing sound.
That's really beautiful. Now, is there like 5% auto tuning going on in there?
Nah, more.
There's something
55,
happening.
55%.
Okay, all right, cool. I've never worked with an auto tuner before. I'm just asking you. Listen, you have this album coming out called Victorious.
Woo,
okay, so let's talk about that. It's brand new.
Yeah.
it drops, as the kids like to say.
They do say it, that, don't they?
Nobody says that. Yeah, it comes out on August 2nd. So, tell me about this
album. I'd love to tell you about the record. So excited about the record that there's a theme on the album that is this. I think in culture, what it seems like is happening, I think parents, teachers, universities, whatever, are putting this message out, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that life is so awesome and every day is awesomer than the last. And every day you just have to be the awesomest you can ever be. And it's perfect. And it's not true. Life is hard and life is a fight. And so the idea of victorious is that you can be victorious. You can win these battles. Good news for us who follow Christ. The battle belongs to God. So we know we are victorious, but we still got a lot of fighting to do. We still got to get a little dirty. And so the theme of victorious is fight songs. It's supposed to make you feel inspired to not run away from the fight, but to say, all right, God, I'm ready. Where do you want me? And let's face this. Come on, baby.
That is awesome. Actually, that really is wonderful. That's really wonderful. Victoria sounds like a Christian. Like, if I heard that, I would say, like, that sounds Christian to me, right?
Yeah.
But if you're not a Christian, I don't think you'd pick up on that. It's like one of those things that it's like a word.
That is the essence of Skillet.
Exactly.
That is the essence of our songs, right. Is that you pick up on it and you go, oh, victorious, because we think of Christ being victorious. Yeah. You would think of, you know, the victory. He has won the victory. But in the world, you could remind you of Game of Thrones. It could remind you of all these, you know.
Katy Perry.
lots of things. So I think that's a cool message.
So it could remind you of the devil's music. We're good stuff.
It does not remind me of the devil's music at all. No, no.
Oh my gosh, we've only got about 2 minutes. What is on the album? I know it's songs, but tell me about some of the songs.
Okay, I'd love to. The first single is called Legendary. And this song, Legendary, is it needs to be, and I hope somebody's listening, it needs to be like, the NFL song of the year, all right? Because this song make you want to, like, go in and just destroy in an arena. Fist pumping, you know? It's a good workout song. And Legendary, it's about not giving up. It's kind of funny, ironically enough, about the fact that we will not be legendary. We will probably not be remembered, any of us, in 200 years. It's not about leaving this big legacy. It's about living the life that you want to live now. What has God called me to do? Who has he called me to be? And live every day to try to reach that. So that's the first song, Legendary. And, the title track, Victorious, is special to me. Corey and I wrote it together, and it's a song that kind of deals with depression. We have so many fans that reach out to us about dealing with depression, and this is a song that hopefully inspires people to know that they're not alone and that they can make it through these struggles
they have. I've been public about struggling with depression. Depression is so awful, and I always want people to know you're not the only one going through it. Like a lot of people that you'd never know, because I'm not going to act depressed on here, even though I might be.
Right.
But, a lot of people are struggling with that. They need to know how many other people are doing that. So that's
absolutely
good for you.
Absolutely.
We're like out of time. Holy cow. John and Corey Cooper, God bless you. Thanks for doing what you do. And may the Lord bless this album and the rest of your lives and careers. Good to see you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Bulletproof vest to save yourself from what you could.